An announcement earlier this year that hospitals in Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls will close and that a physician network in western Wisconsin's Chippewa Valley will permanently shut down shocked many in the region and left residents wondering what's next for local health care in their communities. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Today, we take a look at those closures and what it will mean for the people and communities of western Wisconsin. Later in the program, we'll speak with Wisconsin Senator Jesse James, Republican of Altoona, about legislative efforts related to the closures, and we'll hear from Dr. Thomas Kemp of the UW-Eau Claire Department of Economics. But first, we welcome Dr. Jose Artesensi, director of UW-Eau Claire's Healthcare Administration Program, to talk about the loss of these facilities. Doctor, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and your role there at the school.
Sure. I've been here at UW-Eau Claire for over 20 years. We run a healthcare administration program, and I've taught in our MBA program. So although my undergraduate program focuses a bit more on post-acute care and long-term care, I teach classes about the healthcare system in general and in our MBA program as well.
Well, when you learned about these closures, what went through your mind? Did it come as a surprise to you?
This was very shocking. To be honest, there was a piece of me that wasn't totally unexpecting to hear news like this at some point. We have had a number of new hospitals built in the area, although smaller certainly than the hospitals that are closing, which I anticipated could have some pressure. But healthcare providers have been under a lot of pressure for a long time, since before the pandemic and certainly since the pandemic, with different pressures related to healthcare reimbursement from Medicare and Medicaid, increased demands on our healthcare system. And then with the pandemic, you know, we kind of saw an acceleration of several other factors that probably sped up what were some of the challenging situations that these providers were already dealing with.
What are you hearing from people in your community about how this will affect them?
Two things came to mind when I first heard this. Even if I thought maybe this isn't the most surprising thing to ever occur, is obviously people that rely on those providers for care. I think that this news was and is devastating for people who have any kind of chronic illness, people who are in the middle of treatment for some kind of care. Those are the people that first jumped to mind. And then secondly, what came to mind was the challenge that this area already has relative to behavioral health needs. We have shortages of mental health services on both an outpatient and inpatient basis. And Sacred Heart in particular was a big provider of substance abuse and inpatient mental health care for our community. So that's a very distinct and noticeable loss that we're going to be incurring.
How significant is the gap already with behavioral health services in the Eau Claire area?
It's big. I mean, already here in the Chippewa Valley, there are people that are waiting 9 months to see a psychiatrist, which are the type of physicians that can manage medications, especially for people that have complex psychiatric conditions.
Already, 9 months.
Already. Child mental health can be very difficult to find a provider. And that it's a combination of increased demand. Luckily, we are kind of finally decreasing the stigma around mental health, and people are recognizing, hey, this is not a character flaw. This is a mental health disorder. I could get relief or help from this. And so coupled with reducing that stigma, then we have kind of the access challenges as we now have more people seeking care. And I think we also, as a result of the pandemic, had a lot more people maybe experiencing mental health challenges as well. So it's already a big gap. If you watch the news in surrounding areas in the Twin Cities and south of here down in La Crosse, healthcare providers are already kind of panicking about these closures because their own systems are already stressed in certain areas. So thinking about trying to absorb more care when you already have access challenges is challenging for providers that are already out there and patients that are in these other regions that are worried about increased stresses on their networks. And certainly it's stressful to the people who live in western Wisconsin that are,
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, the effect on communities outside of Eau Claire and the Chippewa Falls city limits. I mean, talk a little bit more about that. How is this going to really affect the entire region?
Well, The way we kind of use healthcare, especially for more rural areas, is sort of a tiered system. So people that are in the real rural towns, they're largely probably seeking healthcare in their more local areas for primary care services and maybe emergency services. And then when people in those small rural towns need to see a specialist, for example, they usually turn to places like Eau Claire or more of these kind of mid-sized towns that are maybe they have to drive an hour or a couple hours to get there and they can see a specialist, right? And then for really, really complex, complicated healthcare services like an organ transplant or things like that, sometimes you'll be, really need to be seen in a larger city like in Minneapolis or in Madison, where they have access to the kind of specialists and care that are needed. But an area like Eau Claire, Chippewa Falls really serves an important role, not just to the people that live in that immediate Chippewa Valley area, but to the surrounding rural areas for a couple hour drive. And so, yeah, everyone around the area that's losing services is probably going to feel that increased pressure of people that are looking to transition their care and need access to care services because the demand for care is not going away, right? People are still going to be having babies. People are still going to be developing diabetes. People still need treatment for cancer. People still need care for what's going on with them. So the need hasn't gone away. And the most pressure is going to be felt on us here in the short term during all of these transitions.
Wisconsin lawmakers are looking for ways to help. Of course, there were two bills that would allocate millions in grants. One was vetoed. What are your thoughts on those efforts?
I think it's great. I really commend all of our legislators, and really, I commend our entire local community coming together the way that they have, the rest of the healthcare providers in the area. Government officials, our legislators, recognizing this is going to be a really challenging time for our region to go through and to ensure that people are not falling through the cracks and losing their lives or losing their quality of life as a result of losing access to care. So I definitely commend the quick action that the legislature and the governor took to be able to try to repurpose the $15 million that was already allocated to our area to increase access to behavioral health services to be able to put that money to use to try to solve some of our more immediate challenges. I do think that there's more that the government could do. They do have to take some ownership in contributing to the cause of the problem with under reimbursements for care, particularly on the Medicaid side of things. That's what the state has control over relative to reimbursement. In some areas, they've made some positive changes in recent years, but they've been pretty behind on their reimbursements for a long time, which has contributed to this challenge. So, longer term, looking at solutions like that are going to require our legislators to work together to do what's best for the people of the state. I think a lot of people are kind of shocked when a situation like this occurs because we kind of think of the government as being that safety net or they're our protector. And I think everybody kind of knows we have some challenges with our healthcare system. But I think what's top of mind for most people is that healthcare is so expensive. And thinking about not having access to healthcare isn't something that I think a lot of people kind of take that for granted. Like, well, it's expensive, but I can get the care I need if I really need it. And we do have certainly a lot of government agencies that play a role in healthcare. More than half of healthcare services are funded through Medicare and Medicaid, which are our government funded programs. But we don't have a healthcare system with a single entity that's sitting at the top, like a business, and overseeing and coordinating all of the activities to make sure all of the things that we as consumers or citizens, you know, care about are happening. There's all kinds of different agencies across the federal government, across the state government, different legislatures federally or state passed laws that maybe play a role here, play a role there. But it's really a patchwork of all kinds of different laws and regulations related to healthcare that kind of give us this funky system within which we work or need to receive care. And so there are some states that have, in fact, the majority of states have some state laws that provide certain protections for people, Like if you're if a bunch of providers in your insurance network all of a sudden close or drop out or are no longer available, is there any obligation by your insurance company to make sure that you have adequate access to providers within the network that they're allowing you to seek care in? Wisconsin doesn't have special protections like that. Wisconsin doesn't have any special procedures that have to be followed when a hospital is going to close. There's special procedures that have to be followed when a nursing home closes to make sure that there's a special plan in place and that every single resident has a good care plan transition and know where they're going to go, know that their needs will be met. But we don't have laws like that in Wisconsin to support this transition. So we're really kind of in many cases, sort of at the mercy of the people involved, doing the best they can to do the best they can, as opposed to rules, requirements, or laws that are saying you have to do this, you have to have this much time, you have to make sure XYZ happens. We don't have a lot of those kind of protections relative to hospital closures or changes with people's insurance network accessibility here in Wisconsin.
Do other states have different procedures?
Yeah, there are. I mean, we're a republic of states, and so there's certainly some federal healthcare regulations that have to be followed by any healthcare provider that accepts reimbursement from Medicare or Medicaid. But on the state level, Wisconsin doesn't really have any specific laws
Okay.
regulating hospitals and their closures.
With an aging population and the low reimbursement rates that you talked about, I mean, I guess it begs the question, is the business model for hospitals, especially rural hospitals, even sustainable the way it is?
Well, no, it's not really. And in fact, when we think about our rural hospitals, most of our rural hospitals got built after World War II in the 1940s. We passed something called the Halliburton Act. War has always had a lot of influence on our healthcare system because, well, soldiers get injured or sustain mental health injuries relative to being in a war zone. And so then we're able to kind of utilize the knowledge that we learn in those situations and make improvements kind of back here at home. And so after World War II, we had a lot of medical advances, and we kind of had this idea or sense as a country that we want, now that we know how to provide kind of this care, we should make sure everyone has access to it. So the Halliburton Act led to the building of hospitals throughout the country, kind of a first effort at sort of ensuring there's access. And then other laws and regulations have been passed. So in rural areas, there's different designations for small community hospitals. So a lot of the rural hospitals in Eau Claire have a critical access hospital designation. And by having a critical access hospital designation to your hospital, it says, hey, this hospital is here for a certain purpose. We want to make sure people have access to emergency care. And by virtue of having that designation, that hospital is going to get paid differently through programs like Medicare, than hospitals that don't have that same designation. Because you're absolutely right. In a rural area, to provide emergency care, you have to have the lights on and the heat on and the electricity all winter, and you got to have it staffed, even if only one emergency is coming in a day. And so I hope that we're going to find ourselves in a situation where we can utilize some of those existing rural hospitals in different ways than we have before to absorb some of the losses we're sustaining with these hospital closures. But it's going to take time for all the healthcare providers to figure out new ways of doing things within the constraints of the complicated way we pay for healthcare in this country.
Jennifer, thank you so much for chatting with us today. I really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
That was Dr. Jennifer Jose Artacense, Director of UW-Eau Claire's Healthcare Administration Program, discussing the way residents and communities are responding to the news that hospitals will close in Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls in the coming weeks and months. Ahead, we'll speak with a UW-Eau Claire economics professor and a state lawmaker as our conversation continues. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Shereen Seewert. We are continuing our discussion on the impact of the closures of two hospitals in western Wisconsin, what that will mean for residents and communities. Now we welcome Dr. Thomas Kemp, Department Chair of the UW-Eau Claire Department of Economics. Dr. Kemp, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Okay. So I spent most of my life in Wisconsin, grew up in the Milwaukee area, but I've lived here in the Eau Claire area for a little better than 20 years and professor of economics for nearly all that time. I had the good fortune to serve on the Eau Claire City Council and the Eau Claire Redevelopment Authority for a long period of time. So yeah, I've married, two kids, right? I'm happy to have been able to be part of this community over a relatively long period now.
And in those roles, it sounds like you have a pretty good finger on the pulse of what's going on in Eau Claire and what this will mean for Eau Claire and for the region. What was your reaction when you heard about these closures?
Yeah, well, it's very disappointing, right? It's disappointing in the sense that it means a lot of people's lives are going to be disrupted directly and indirectly as a result of this, and that's not a good situation to be facing, whether you're a patient who is looking, you know, is getting care or was going to be getting care in the near term future, or of course if you're employed at one of the many businesses, well, buildings, operations that are going to be shuttered. You know, it's just another thing that nobody looks forward to in their life.
You have a sense of the economic impact this is going to have on the community, at least in the short term?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking, we're hearing estimates of around 1,400 jobs. So that's a huge number for the Eau Claire community. And so that's all incomes won't be earned. And of course, money that won't be spent in our local grocery stores, the students that won't be maybe in school, won't be going out to eat, won't be buying gasoline, won't be buying new or used cars. So it's a huge amount of expenditure that would have occurred that likely isn't going to occur. And that's because, you know, people's lives have been, again, disrupted.
I read a story in The Economist. It was from last year. The headline caught my eye. And the headline was, "Why Healthcare Services Are in Chaos Everywhere." Are they? I mean, do you think that that's really the case for economic reasons?
Well, I think that folks have the impression that a lot of things are relatively chaotic these days, healthcare being one of them. And certainly the system by which we provide healthcare and we pay for healthcare is extremely complicated. We have, many people get healthcare through their work, which of course can be tenuous, as we're just seeing, right? If you lose your job, then you potentially lose your healthcare. The payment system, we have myriad numbers of insurance, which are paid to many different hospitals. Often people have to get different services. So this is extremely complicated, right? It's extremely complicated in terms of the number of providers, how services provided, how payments are provided. And I think a lot of folks find that challenging. Certainly I do.
Yeah, certainly. I read a story about you a couple of years ago that talked about an economics class you taught at the university that focused on the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. From a healthcare standpoint, how significant was the pandemic with respect to hospital systems and their financial health?
Yeah, well, COVID-19 was threw that already chaotic system into a far greater degree of chaos that likely we're still recovering from. You had we all were there, right? We were all, most of us were either getting tests or getting inoculations or any number of things, and you know, the hospitals were packed. If we were there for other services, right, we found that the waiting times were greater. The hospital staff was, dare one say, overworked, long hours. The payments for a lot of the services weren't entirely clear where payments were coming from. Are they coming from the government? Are they coming from the individuals? And how timely will they be incoming? So essentially, the hospitals were put in a situation where they had to more or less save society and provide that labor, right, to save society as well as, you know, all the other materials necessary, but yet without any assurance of compensation for doing that, right? Which so I'm not in hospital management, but I have to think that that created a massive amount of uncertainty for them.
Oh, I would think so. I mean, and we're hearing a lot about some of the challenges, workforce related challenges, Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement rates. I mean, those are all factors that hospital systems say are leading to their struggle. Do you think that the problems we're seeing that led to these closures is symptomatic of what's happening in other communities? I mean, I guess, do you feel like other hospitals are at risk?
I couldn't say. What does seem to be the case is that a lot of service providers are pulling out of smaller communities, and that's not just hospitals, right? But it's banking and finance, legal.
Sure.
If you're in rural Wisconsin, it's almost getting to the point where it's forget about it. You can't really find these things, and even smaller communities, right? Smaller cities smaller than Eau Claire are seeing these services disappear. I hope that this isn't one part of, in a larger piece of this happening in a place like Eau Claire. Eau Claire has been a service provider to the region historically, and I hope it will continue to do that. I think it would be very difficult if the entirety of Western Wisconsin had to go to the Twin Cities for services, or perhaps down to Madison or Milwaukee or Chicago. That would be a real challenge for folks here. So that's concerning, right? That's concerning, and perhaps this is part of that. I couldn't say.
What are some of the biggest economic challenges with US healthcare systems, in addition to reimbursement rates and the chaos that the pandemic brought on us? I mean, is it because we're an aging population, or I mean, healthcare is growing as a share of the economy and government budgets in ways that kind of appear unsustainable.
Yeah, I'm always hesitant to use words like sustainable or unsustainable, but the trajectory is not good. We do certainly spend more on healthcare as a share of our total income when compared to really pretty much every other developed nation. So in other words, if we looked at American incomes as say $1, how many cents of that dollar are paying towards healthcare versus say in other countries earning the same amount, they're spending less, right? So they're spending less on healthcare. And for not universally, but many of them are getting superior outcomes, which leads to the question of, why is that? Why are we spending more and conceivably getting less? And I think that's a complicated question.
What do you think the answer is? I mean,
Well,
obviously it's complicated, but yeah.
I mean, I could speculate, but
Sure.
that's hazardous, right? I don't, and as an economist, I just don't, that keeps me up at night, right? I don't
Yeah.
want to speculate. To me, like I said, I see spend more, get less. And I say, my next question is, we better investigate this and figure out what's going on. But I haven't done that investigation, and I don't know what's going on, but there's a problem for sure.
For sure.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit more about the ripple effect that hospitals have in communities like Eau Claire. I mean, clearly, the goods and services hospitals purchase from other businesses create additional economic value for the community. So, I mean, it's not just the jobs lost within the hospital system itself, but it goes beyond that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And when we think about the jobs here in the medical profession, broadly construed, right? So we think medical, we think maybe doctors and nurses, but there's a whole ton of other folks who are required to make a hospital function, right? But in the aggregate, right, those jobs are pretty good jobs. And so as a consequence, they're relatively high paying by and large. And so they contribute a lot to making this little economic engine here in Eau Claire sort of work, right? The Eau Claire economy is really driven by a couple of things. One is medical, and the other is education. Those two are, significant drivers of the Eau Claire economy. And as a consequence, reduction in either of those has large effects because of the numbers of people and the incomes that they're earning. And so you start pulling that out. And it starts impacting really every other industry. You think, go to Menards on a Saturday morning, right? And it's full of folks who work there, right? And if they're not,
Right.
they don't have that money, right? They're not pulling in that money. They're not going to make, you know, they're not going to do those home repairs. They're not going to do all those other things that maybe are they would like to do, but are maybe at the fringes of what needs to be done. And so those retail establishments take that hit, restaurants take that hit, gas stations take the hit. You name it, right? In a place like Eau Claire, when you start reducing medical, it's going to cut deep and it's going to cut hard because it's so important to the local economy.
What are the conversations like in the community? I mean, what are you hearing from your friends, from city leaders, from business people in the community? What's the sense?
I'm somewhat out of the loop of all that these days, but people are concerned, right? And I think that right now what I see this community doing, one, is trying to pull together to show support for the folks that are being directly impacted by this in a variety of ways, which people are losing their jobs, right? As well as people are losing their healthcare, potentially, or their healthcare provider, I should say. And that's really nice to see, right? Eau Claire, I think, is pretty good at that. I think we have a really good history of pulling together in times of trouble. And then the second thing I see amongst a lot of professionals and sort of leaders in the community is really effective thinking about how to mitigate this problem. I'm very excited, and it makes me optimistic to look at how, for example, the chamber and the city council have come together to put together the task force, which has been essentially putting people together who can pick up the pieces that are invariably going to be left behind when folks leave. And that's in my take as an economist, that's absolutely the right approach to be taking. And I'm really really happy that a lot of extremely knowledgeable people have stepped up to take leadership roles in doing that. So
Have you been
I'm optimistic.
happy with the way that the lawmakers in your area have responded to this as well? I know there's been a lot of conversations at the state level too.
Yeah, well, the politicians are going to quibble about this, that, or the other thing. That's
That's what they do. Yeah.
the nature of it, right? And
Right, right.
we'd all be somewhat disappointed if they didn't. But the both the bills, right, that came out of the legislature recently, the one that was vetoed as well as the one that was passed, I think were both really good faith efforts. Everybody, again, everybody's trying to pull together. They got some different ideas about how to do this, but everybody's trying to pull together to sort of put some money in this hole for the time being, so that money can essentially provide the means to build the bridge from what was to what will be, right? And so this is the thing about healthcare, right? We're unfortunately all going to keep getting sick, right? Next year and the year after that, right? We're all going to need medical procedures next year and the year after that. We're all still living here, right? So demand for healthcare isn't going away in this region. So we have a thing that's leaving. Something else will have to be built, right? There's some other entities that will have to come in. But in the meantime, right, in the short term, there's going to be gaps. There's going to be calamity, right? And so I think that this effort by the legislature to put some money into that to fund that bridge from what was, right, to what will be, it makes a lot of sense.
Do you have some hope for the future? I mean, what do you ultimately think is going to happen in Eau Claire to take care of this and solve this problem?
I'm optimistic. As I say, Eau Claire has a good history of really pulling together and working collaboratively to solve community problems. As I also say, we're going to need healthcare, right? The population of Eau Claire, thankfully, continues to grow, and will continue to grow into the foreseeable future. And all those people are going to need healthcare. And all those people aren't going to travel to, China or Thailand or much less Mexico or any of these places to get healthcare. So there's going to have to be healthcare in the region. What that healthcare looks like is somewhat yet to be determined. There are exciting news. It looks like we have a variety of business entities that are looking to expand into the Chippewa Valley, which is good, right? That gives us some idea about what that eventual form is likely to look like what healthcare is likely to look like in the Chippewa Valley 5, 10 years from now. So that's exciting to see it happening really this quickly. I mean, it sounds terrible. We're only, just up 6 weeks out or so from this all becoming news, right? So things are moving really quickly to get new pieces into the area, new healthcare providers into the area, as maybe older ones move out. So that's nice to see. It's nice to see.
I'm curious. I feel like we're seeing a lot more hospital mergers in recent years, and maybe it's just more on my radar than it used to be. St. Luke's and Duluth just merged with Aspirus and Wausau, for example. And until recently, Marshfield Clinic was planning a major merger that fell through. What are some of the benefits of merging? Do you think we're going to see more of that?
Well, the short answer is yes. I think he, so. I mean, one of the things with American healthcare, right, is that we have a large number of providers and a large number of payers, right? There's the number of insurance providers, the vehicles through which insurance is provided, the diversity of hospitals, right, or clinics is significant, right? And diversity of healthcare is significant. I mean, the quality that people have access to. That's ripe for change, right? There's a lot of problems there and a lot of challenges. And so, of course, savvy players are going to look for reorganization that weeds out some of those problems, that resolves some of those problems. And those resolutions may be seen from individuals as good or bad, right? Like, it looks like maybe we're going to have smaller clinics in the area, and maybe a little fewer large hospitals. Who knows whether that's good or bad from the average health outcome perspective. I'm not sure, right? But yeah, I think we have a trend towards mergers, right? We've been in a long merger wave across a variety of industries in the United States for many years now, and it sure looks like it shows no sign of slowing down.
When we're talking about the hospital situation in Eau Claire, the healthcare situation in Eau Claire, it sounds like we're in for a bumpy ride that will eventually be solved one way or the other. Do you have a sense at all of how long that's going to take? Is that going to be a really long process, or do you think this is going to be something that people can come together and move toward quickly?
Yeah, I expect there to be a shorter term solution and a longer term solution. I think that, well, let's put it this way. So people who are involved in intensive, longer term medical care, I suspect that that solution will be arrived at relatively quickly. I suspect that the solution that emerges in the coming months is not going to be the permanent solution, and it's going to be bumpier than the long-term solution.
Well, Dr. Kemp, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate you sharing your perspective with us.
Yeah, happy to do so. Thanks for the time.
I'm Shireen Seward. This is Route 51. Ahead, Republican State Senator Jesse James of Altoona joins us to talk about legislative action in response to the closures as our conversation continues on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. We continue now our discussion on the effect of hospital closures in communities in the Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls area. Joining us now is Wisconsin State Senator Jesse James, Republican of Altoona, to share information on legislative action connected to these closures. Senator James, welcome back to Route 51. It's great to see you.
Thank you for having me. Good to see you.
Were you shocked by the news when you heard it?
To be honest, I was not. That when we had the phone call with the HSHS personnel, it didn't shock me as much as my other colleagues. I'll leave it at that. We did have the conversations about the mental health bed expansion that was supposed to take place within HSHS, primarily at St. Joseph's Hospital, for the expansion of adult and juvenile psychiatric services. However, back last June timeframe, May, June. We had a conversation, and they mentioned at the time that they were not going to be able to do the project, which raised a red flag for me. I thought initially they were going to just back out of doing mental health services altogether. As other entities have made that same choice based on the cost of taking care of our mental health patients in Wisconsin. Then when they said that they're closing the facilities as well as the Purveya urgent care centers, that did catch my attention, and definitely we're feeling the impacts of it still, and we still will for quite some time.
What are you hearing from your constituents? What are their biggest concerns?
Well, number one, it's with Chippewa County being primarily affected with the closure of St. Joseph's, as well as the Purveyas in that area, the lack of emergency department services and the immediate urgent care needs for the patients is devastating to Chippewa County. There's so many impacts, ripple effects that was shared as far as losing the county morgue. Chippewa County does not have a morgue anymore, or they won't. Losing our, as a law enforcement officer, we go to St. Joseph's for blood draws. That's not going to happen anymore. Patients that are being driven from the Chippewa County area for services, the ER, the emergency room department being closed, you know, between Sacred Heart and St. Joe's, they saw 22,000 patients in 2023. That is a large number for the Chippewa Valley to absorb with our other medical facility, emergency room departments. What's that going to look like? The delayed response with ambulance services. You know, we're hearing now it could be an hour round trip for a Chippewa Falls ambulance to get to the patient, provide transportation services to Eau Claire, do their necessary sanitizing, cleaning, and then get back out there ready for duty. You're talking potential hour. That raises so many red flags. And you know, we need to make sure that we have the basic services available to our people up in the Chippewa Valley.
In response to these announcements, you originally co-authored a couple of bills. Tell us about those.
So the first one, obviously we had the $15 million for the mental health expansion, the psychiatric services. And that is something that is still near and dear to my heart. And it hurt that that potential was taken away because at the time HSHS was the only one interested in providing additional medical or mental health psychiatric services. All the other entities in our area were not interested. So Senator Bernier and I worked diligently on that. So we had the $15 million already available. It was sitting in the building trust fund, and we were supposed to use that for the psychiatric services. And then having it available, the one bill removed it from the trust fund and moved it into the supplemental aid into the general fund, or GPR, general purpose revenue, into supplemental aid so that it would be available for use. And then the legislation that was drafted was for the second piece was to be able to use it for any type of capital expenditures. And we looked at that so that the number one, that the community's needs were met. I didn't really $15 million is only going to go so far.
Mm-hmm.
And this was to really look at Chippewa County, Chippewa area first and foremost, giving priority to them with the amount of services that they lost, and then having Eau Claire as a second. But obviously the bills went through the process, and then the governor uses partial veto. And there were some amendments offered, but again, to get the support from colleagues, we tried to keep it as basic as simple, because or basic as possible, because when we, I try to keep things simple. I call myself the KISS legislator, keep it simple, stupid, because I didn't want to complicate things, because when you complicate things, it makes things worse and more difficult to pass. And having a simple message to go out there as far as getting the basic needs, what Chippewas and Eau Claire is looking for, was the first and foremost priority, taking care of our people, and having that money available so that they could use it and go to GFC. The people would have to bring the plan as far as what they're going to use the monies for to DHS. DHS in turn would come to the Joint Finance Committee, share the plan, and then they would do the authorization to release the funds. And they would be able to make a determination whether it was a worthy project or not a project that they weren't going to support at the time. Obviously, the governor uses partial veto. I was for having some changes, like to help with urgent cares as well, because we have a large influx of patients that go to emergency rooms for like a major nosebleed, stuff like that. And I've seen it at firsthand. And urgent cares can treat those people probably a little easier, quicker than having our emergency room departments clogged up with, I guess, I don't want to minimize things, but like non-emergent cases. So being able to have the amendments, I voted for the amendments, and then obviously the governor decided to do his partial veto, which did ultimately expand the services. It didn't pass the legislature that way, but there was definitely value in it.
So there's some help on the way, but this is a short-term solution, right? You know, what do you see down the road for long-term solutions to filling the gaps now that will be existing in the area?
With the Eau Claire Chamber, the Chippewa County Chamber, Dunn County Chamber, and I think even maybe even further than that, some of the counties are having more dialogue and conversations as far as what this looks like. You know, Oakleaf Clinics was looking to do an expansion to take on more of the services. They did have a lot of contracts through HSHS to provide those services already. So they do have some established opportunities and infrastructure in place already for more services to be taken on. There's other discussions taking place behind the scenes that I have not been be able to confirm nor deny yet. I did hear that there's a possible interest in the St. Joseph's complex to immediately address the needs at that hospital and maybe continuing services that were offered there. Again, I haven't been able to confirm that 100%. So there's a lot of behind the scenes talks going on. I think it's yet remain to be seen the complexity of exactly every single ripple effect that this is going to have across the Chippewa Valley region. And sadly, but beneficially, if this were to happen somewhere else in the state, at least we'll potentially have some models and guidelines in place as far as, okay, this is what we've learned from this. This is what we've done, whether good or bad. And people are sadly, but beneficially going to learn from it. So that's, you know, they say it with everything bad, something good comes out of it. It's really sad to say this, but, you know, we know that hospitals across our nation are closing. We need to look at this big picture. And I think there's viable solutions, that could take place. It's just a matter of what they look like legislatively and if we can get them through in our state.
And I will say hospital systems are saying largely they're struggling due to reimbursement challenges from healthcare payers, particularly Medicaid reimbursement. Last year, more than 100 hospitals called on Wisconsin lawmakers to boost reimbursement. I mean, is that something that you think is a potential solution?
So those are conversations that are being had every single session. You know, with reimbursement rates, I'm not on the health committee. There's a lot smarter people that understand this Medicaid, Medicare process and how it financially impacts our state. I mean, I've heard some even say that we should take a look at this. A lot of states across our nation are looking at it. I think there's maybe like seven states left that haven't. But there's no gap in coverage in our state as well. And I think those that need these services, that need additional support with Medicaid dollars, they have it offered right now. And I know the reimbursement part of it is the whole caveat behind this. I think that's some part of the conversation that still needs to be had, especially when it comes to mental health services. And that's the part that I'm still like looking at individually. So if you have AODA services, what does that look like? Does it cover the services? Does it cover the bed and room? Because there seems to be some differentiation there. So these are the things that I'm starting to learn to look at on how precise precise what costs are covering what. And I think that's part of the larger discussion that we need to have. The mental health, that's a huge loss for any single hospital that's taken on mental health patients. We already know that that's a huge loss. So what can we do better there? We put money into improving reimbursement rates. I think a few sessions we've done that, but it seems like we can do higher reimbursements for certain things, and we've invested in that, but then there's some things that we're not. So I need to learn more about that part.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How dire is the mental health situation in the Eau Claire area? I heard earlier this hour, one of our guests said that there can be a 9-month wait for an appointment. How bad is it? And how worried are you about these closures with respect to that?
Well, so I did have a Zoom meeting just yesterday with a mental health provider, and that the partnership that they have with school districts and the issues that they're facing as far as, you know, they've had to stop taking Medicaid so that they can be competitive in the wages that they offer their staff, because they're losing revenue, they're losing money, and they can't stay competitive in that regard, and they're not making any dollars. So that's a huge red flag for me. I think that's something that we need to look at. There were some ideas that were shared, but again, when you're only one of 132 legislators, and to try and get everybody collectively to agree on something that never happens, well, most cases it doesn't happen, but we have to have some tough conversations moving forward as a state. We have to have these conversations. And I know that with what's happened in the Chippewa Valley, that is hopefully the fuel to the fire to get these conversations going.
Are you hopeful that that this will be a bumpy ride for a short time, or do you think that that this is going to be kind of a long, drawn out, difficult time when it comes to healthcare in the region?
Well, I think we have so many factors that come into play, and a lot of it I hear is the post-COVID. I think COVID was devastating to our nation, to the world for that matter. And a lot of lessons are still yet to be learned. I think there's going to be more data and statistics, more evidence-based decision-making coming forth as, you know, the potential, if this were to repeat itself. These are the conversations that we need to start having, and we need to be real about it, because, you know, we've heard like over 600 hospitals have closed across our nation. So this is happening. It's not only in Wisconsin, but across our nation. And what's causing this? What does the big picture look like? And, you know, this comes, it's about taking care of our people. And in this case, we have to put people over politics, no matter what it looks like. And when we have to talk about uncomfortable things, you know, if you say, you know, the tie of Medicaid expansion, you're increasing welfare. But we have to have conversations. And for those that are interested in learning more and more about it, I think that's where it starts if we get the interested parties at the table.
Senator, thank you so much for spending the time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
This is Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. Once more, extending a sincere thanks to our guests, Dr. Jennifer Joes Artisensi, Dr. Thomas Kemp, and Senator Jesse James. Ezra Wall and Joy Ratch Kramer assisted in producing this program today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of this program and our previous programs at WPR.org/Route 51 and on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks for listening in. This is Wisconsin Public Radio.